Hey fellas, welcome back to A Runner's Life podcast. I'm joined by Rob, Phil and CJ. How you doing, guys?
I'm doing well, man.
What's up? What's up? Good to be back.
I'm back on my feet, man.
Oh, man, stop playing us like this. You're trying to play the old man card. It runs like a 248 in Chicago. Like, I don't know if I'm going to make it.
Hey, I didn't. We'll talk about it. It was an interesting race, though.
I know. That's experience, man. Let's start off with like a recap of like where we are. So Rob and I recently finished Berlin a couple of weeks back. Rob, I know you're back into training for Indy. Can you talk a little bit about the race for you and kind of how you sort of found it and any sort of learnings for post-race?
So Berlin, it was good. Berlin was a solid day. Early on in the race, I just had a feeling I didn't have all the gears I needed to buckle down to make that final 10K push. So it was more so at the end, the last 10K, just give it what I got, but don't dig too much into a hole, because I have another race coming up. So I would say Berlin was a solid measuring stick to where I think I can be coming up in 2 weeks with another marathon. 2:39:57. So I was another, it was a 3-minute PR from Boston. So I'll take it. Wasn't satisfied 100%, but I'll definitely take that. Since Berlin, really, I had an easy week when I came back. I ran every day when I came back from Berlin, besides the day that I flew because of the time difference. It was crazy. And then I had another 70-mile week. And then this week, I don't know how I did it. I snuck in another 100-mile week. I was feeling like CJ out there. And then now it's taper time again. I feel like I just tapered, but I'm feeling fresh. So this taper would be a little different with me. We learned that I work a little better when my legs aren't like 100% the freshest. So I'll probably do 80 miles this week, 70 to 80 miles this week. And then we'll go into like a 1 week taper for the most part.
And are you mixing that with single runs or just double runs? I mean, how are you sort of doing that sort of mileage?
So this week I will double Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday. So no double on Thursday. And then Friday, I don't usually ever double. But my Monday run won't be as long as it usually is. It'll probably be like 8 instead of 12. And then I'll still run 4 to 6 in the evening. And the same thing on Wednesday. I know Tuesday will be a speed workout. It's either mile repeats or something of that nature.
In the last conversation that we had your teammate Hannah in. Can we have a little recap of what happened in that race? Because you were obviously pacing her.
Yeah. So, for the record, my pacing ability was on par. She'll vouch for it. It was good till mile 13. I could tell early on her breathing was a little bit off, but nothing too crazy. From running with her like all the time, you can tell when your teammate it's there or it's not there. But I felt like it was going to have to be a battle from what I could hear early on. And I think she knew that as well. So at mile 13, she knows personally that she has two chances left to get that OTQ here in Indiana and then running an CIM. So at mile 13, she packed it in, said it wasn't her day, and she dialed back, and she's going to live to fight another day. Since then, she's just really been recovering, getting the mental right. She took a nice trip to Colorado. So, I mean, I'm jealous of that. But she's looking good, man. I mean, it's Hannah. She's a monster. She keeps me motivated. So, I mean, I think she'll get it in Indy. The difference between Indy and Berlin, outside of, like, me pacing, there's an actual 237 pacer. So that should help keep her on task even more. And then I'll be right there with that 237 pacer. So we're just going to lock in and see where it takes us. I'm hoping if it's a good day, after what I did this Saturday in my 20 miler, if it's a real good day, it could be anywhere between 235, 237 for sure.
I think that's tough to hear, obviously, from her side, having to need to dial it back. But obviously, it seems like you're both going for Indy, but obviously you're going to go for your time as well. that you're gonna, you're not yeah. pacing, you're going for it.
Yeah, I'm just going. I'm gunning it. PRER, like CJ would say. But I'm gonna empty the tank. Last race of the season for me. Well, last serious one. I might do like a Thanksgiving one just for fun, but not really race it. But I got a little hot streak going. I'm seven. This is my seventh race of the year. Like, that's serious. If I PR, it'd be my seventh consecutive PR. That's 5K, 10K, half marathon, 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 marathon. So I got a hot streak. I'm trying to keep it going. It's be a solid second year.
Nice. Because I've run Berlin a couple times before, just going back to Berlin. What was it like for you guys coming over? Because it was quite busy in the start. So, I mean, how did you sort of find just traveling over and all that kind of stuff?
I mean, personally, I wouldn't run Berlin again. Unless somebody was paying for everything. Outside of the price, like, that's cool. It's really the atmosphere. Like, you and I talked, it's not outside of actual race day. There was no electricity. You couldn't feel the excitement. There's no street signage, nothing around town to let you know that the marathon's there. It's definitely nothing compared to Boston or Chicago, the two other majors I've been to. So, like, it was sucked was because I flew from Chicago to Berlin. And as I'm on my way to the airport, I see all the Chicago signs. And all that stuff, like, I'm getting hyped for Chicago Marathon. That's after Berlin. I was like, I remember in the car, like, I can't wait to see what Berlin's like. And there was nothing, like, nothing in the airports, no excitement. But on race day, it was lit. I would say the course is pretty solid, though. There's not many dead spots. I feel like the fans definitely showed out. So that was good. They did cross a lot. A lot on the course, so that was a little annoying, but I mean, it's nothing too crazy. And then in general, the course is flat, like they say. You can definitely put up a fast time. I mean, overall, the race itself though was pretty solid. I liked it.
Yeah, that's good to hear. Phil and CJ, like, what your thoughts were watching Berlin from the outside looking in?
I mean, I didn't get to watch it. It was way too early in the morning. I think I caught like the first 15, 30 minutes, if that. And then from there, I just saw the results that morning, which was pretty dope because the women's record went down in Berlin. And then you also had Kipchoge set, get the W as well. Not set the record, but he got the W in Berlin. So, but I know we're going to talk about it later, but it's just setting him up. You know, he got the W there. And Kipton got the W and the world record in Chicago. So it's just setting up them to clash in 2024.
Yeah. How about you, Phil? I know because you've run it a couple of times. Let's hold back the Kipchoge stuff because we're going to get onto that.
I watched it, actually. I actually got to see CJ come in at the end. His hair was bouncing. I said, he looked like a little Fraggle Rock by the hair with his headband on. And I had to rewind it to make sure it was him because I saw the back of it. Because your back of your jersey was different than the front, right, Rob?
Yeah, the back of it's blue, the front's orange.
Yeah, so it threw me off at first because it was different, but I saw it. But watching the race, man, I was just, it was exciting to see, what was Kipchoge going to do? How was he going to bounce back from Boston? I was trying to see what are the elites that they really had in the field that was going to make it an interesting race on either side, women's and men's. But since I knew so many people running it, I watched it. It looked like it got a little bit warm just watching it on TV at the end or whatever. I don't know. Y'all was there. I mean, but
That was probably the warmest marathon I've done. I knew it was going to be warm. Within the first couple of miles when sweat started to drop off my arm. Like, I sweat, but, like, sweat was dropping off my arm within the first several miles. I was like, dang, it might be a long day. It might get hot sooner rather than later.
Yeah, I think it was the direct sun because I noticed the sun was, like, full sun. And no matter what the temperature is, when it's full sun, that automatically make it heat up on somebody that's out there running 10 degrees. At least that's what it feel like. But yeah, so I watched. It was crazy because, man, I was like, dang, man, won't somebody give Kipchoge a napkin or something so he could wipe his nose, man. Like, dude, like Martin Lawrence on was the little character with all
of Roscoe. Yeah, I definitely posted it. I was like, yeah, I gotta post this
because they
didn't help out Kachoki at all, man. He definitely had the snot coming down for the whole ride and for the finish line picks. I'm like, somebody don't love Kachoki enough. He should have had somebody telling him to wipe that off, man.
And then the camera people talking about. He's doing his smile. He out there smiling with snot running both sides of his nose. I'm like, bro, you got on arm sleeves at this point, man. Wipe your nose. You know the camera on you now because you in first place. But yeah, it was to see the race though, it was pretty cool. The one guy tried to stay with him as long as he could. I knew he wasn't gonna be able to last, so he probably was a little bit too hot for him as far as the pace, but yeah, Berlin had me hyped, though, man. I ain't gonna lie. I wanted to be back over there after the race. I mean, afterwards, I signed up. I didn't realize they had where you can time qualify for Berlin, certain age groups. Hmm. So I signed up for next year's Berlin, and I should get it based off the time they said I needed.
It's funny you say that, because I was thinking about Chicago next year, but then Berlin is the 50th edition.
Yeah.
We're making it special, more special than it needs to be, because, like, but it seems still like a good race to be at, potentially.
Yeah, I think I'll probably be there next year.
Oh, I'm definitely in Chicago next year. I was heated not being in Chicago.
Oh, you had FOMO, man. You had serious FOMO.
Oh, I was straight jealous. I was so mad. I was like, man, I should just be in Chicago right now.
You should have just came up, man. You was close. How close are you to Chicago, Rob?
Depending on what part, about 2.5 hours, 3.
Oh, yeah, I'd have drove up the morning of the race to check that out.
No, I should have, man. I was upset. I watched it, though, for sure on the phone, so, but man, I was heated.
Marcus, man, give us a play-by-play of Yo Berlin, man. What's up with the play-by-play for Yo Berlin?
Yeah, OG.
So, yeah. So the real disclosure, so I was sort of going through training, like probably the same for most of you guys. Getting to the start line healthy is a definite challenge. So I had this niggle going into it, my right ankle. I've been managing that, trying to sort that out with my physio, and it just kept swelling up. And, you know, you start runs and it would be sore, and then you'd kind of manage it and it'd go down and get easier. So I actually did okay because I was doing like the half marathon before I got the PR in that race, and got a 10k PR as well, so it's kind of riding my luck. And I was one of those situations thinking, I hope my luck doesn't run out, because you just know that it's still a bit like temperamental. So I got to Berlin, I had a great opportunity with Nike to be a part of the Nike Elite Pacer program, which is basically they take elite runners and they pace you for the first half of the race, and then obviously the rest of it you got to do it yourself. So I had like Grant Fisher in my pen, and it's just incredible to run with someone like of that standard, really. It's like in football or basketball or whatever, you don't get to go in the field or the court with your, you know, the pros. So for me, running with him was amazing, even though he was like really obviously holding back his stride, you know. So I was running with him. I got to 15K. I was feeling good. And I know I was giving you guys the hype up about using your bottles. This year, it was an absolute shambles in Berlin. Like I put my bottles, like, I don't know, like the tables, Robbie will probably see this as well, they're like triple stacked. So you went to the table, you're like going at pace, you can't see your bottle. So I'm like, I was like, damn, I can't see my bottle. And I'm panicking because I've not got any other fuel on me. So I stop, turn around, trying to find my bottle, lose my time there, lose the paces. And then I could pick back up into it. Up to that point, I'm still feeling okay. I'm still on like sub 250 pace. But then the issue I had when I was talking about my tendon started sort of flaring up. And yeah, from about 17K onwards, like that just became an issue. And I just, every step to the end was just, without swearing, painful. And then you talked about the heat as well. I started feeling sick. So it's a mixture between sort of not trying to throw up and then like trying to manage my feet. It's really hurting. And I think it's sort of similar to what you said with Hannah, really. It's just like at 17K onwards, I just knew like my race is over. So I just need to just like bring it in to the best I can. And that's quite a difficult thing because you know you've put in so much work to get there. The marathon could be quite cruel like that. So I just thought, like, got an hour and a half, whatever, just to suck it up and just go. But, you know, 17K in a 42.7K race is very early. So yeah. I had a lot of time to think about it. But it's one of the things that I was just thinking, like, just get to the end and then deal with everything afterwards. But it was painful to the end. And like when I crossed the finish line, it wasn't even like relief. It was just more like, now the pain actually stopped for a moment. Do you know what I mean? It was just like a dead sort of feeling. I can't even explain it.
I know exactly what you mean. That was my Boston with my Achilles. Like,
yeah,
it was like after the first 5 miles, my stuff was shot. So I did as much as I could to get to the finish start line. And then after that initial 5 miles, I was done. I just held on for dear life.
And I know stopping for your bottles didn't help it out at all, man.
Yeah.
Man, that bottle thing is a joke. Oh, man, I would find my bottle as I was literally passing. The only time I actually got one of my bottles was at the very end. And I was actually the one I wanted the most, so it was cool. I was happy about that one. I was like, oh, yeah. But other than that, it was very difficult to see. And then it sucked because the first one I saw, it was like right at the front, but it was like 3 rows into it. So I couldn't even like get it without knocking everybody else over. I was like, forget it.
Do they put the bottles out? I got to
stick with Jeffs.
Do they put the bottles out for y'all or do...
So basically, like last year, right? They whoever did it last year did it properly. Like they spread it out so you could see it. Because if you're running at a pace, you need to see it from a distance and then grab it. But if you've got like the bottles were so tight, they were like tight together, and there was like 3 in a line. So imagine yours is like 7th in the row. Like you're not going to see it at all if you're going at pace. So you need to stop. Yeah. It was an absolute joke, to be honest. I mean, like you're saying, the ones at the end were probably better because probably people thought whatever. But it was just one of those things. Unfortunately, it was just like, man, like.
So they don't even tell you what they don't even tell you what table you're gonna be on, like table 1, table 2, table 3.
No.
You just gotta basically, hopefully you can find it or slow down at the at the table.
At the end though, I did see a couple of Elite bottles that were freed up.
Yeah. And I was, you don't know what's in that bottle though, Rob.
I know exactly. That's exactly why I didn't.
It could be some tequila in there, man.
That's exactly why I didn't take it. I was like, well, if I take this, it might be the end of my race. But then I was kind of thankful I didn't, because it was the first time I've been that, like, been kind of, like, fast. I passed some few female elites. I was feeling good about myself. I was like, man, that might have been their bottle. Good thing I didn't take their bottle.
Yeah, I saw some Elite bottles on the table late in Chicago, and it crossed my mind. I'm like, man, you need something right now, because I had ran out of fuel. I was cramping bad, and I just need. And I forgot my pickle juice, and I was like, man, I need something.
I'm not
something.
The only one that's thought about taking an Elite bottle at the last second. Like, get it.
That's mad though. But like, yeah, it was insane though. So yeah, we've talked about Berlin. We've got to talk a little bit about Chicago now, Phil. So obviously, you're out there. You were. We were asking you to put a time on it for a while. You were just like, oh, you know, the Arkansas summer. Oh, you know, I don't know. Oh, it's so hard. Oh, who's me? Gotta play yourself with him. Yeah, man. And man comes up with a 248. I'm just like, what the hell?
I don't know what the day is going to bring.
Man, that's just how I roll, bro. Like, for real, like, I didn't run no workouts that would suggest that I could run. And I should have ran around 245, 246. And I didn't run no workouts that were suggesting that's the type of time I could run. I was just going to stick to my 200 miles a month and see what we do on race day, you know? Even like before, like, and I didn't even take it that serious. Like, I was on my feet for like 14 hours that Saturday. Like, I went to downtown twice. I was on my feet for 14 miles. I came back to the hotel around 3. I did a 4-mile shakeout run. And that's when I've kind of figured it might be a good day. Because I was just running off field and the paces was down close to 7-minute pace. The heart rate, I would have liked it to be a little bit lower, but I was running into the wind at the hotel and stuff. But after that run, I felt like it could be that day. Like, I felt like it might be a good day. We just had to see. But I shorted myself on some fuel, and somebody was supposed to bring me one to the store. And then they was like, I didn't think I was going to see you, and they didn't bring me one. So I had to take off with what I had. And the weather was perfect, man. Like, you really couldn't ask for a better weather, for me anyway, personally. The weather was perfect. It was overcast. It wasn't complete overcast, but it was enough overcast to keep the sun off of you. And I had a came up with what I was going to do was just take the first mile easy and then just ease into it from there and see how I felt. And I did the first mile on the, you know, I was checking my watch because I know the buildings can throw you the GPS off some. But I think for this race, it was pretty on point for me anyway, because my watch hit at the first mile marker right on cue. The second mile, it would hit like maybe like two or three steps before the mile marker. And then at that point, I knew I could rely on it to give me a ballpark of where I'm at. So when I came across the, I wrote down where I want to be to get in that 248 range for the 10K, the half, a couple other spots. So when I hit the 10K, I think I was like 10 seconds behind where I wanted to be. And I'm cool with that, because the first 13 miles, they don't really, you can be behind. I mean, I think Kevin Kipton, I think he was behind most of the race on the world record. So, but I saw a guy I was going to run with around mile 9-ish or whatever. And he was moving good, and I was moving good. And I was in the middle. He was on the outside. And I thought about going over there and run with him. But then I was like, nah, I just want to go off a field. I want to run the way I want to run. I don't want to be locked in at a pace and saying we're going to hit this pace no matter what. We're just going to take it mile by mile. And so I stayed in the middle of the road and shot on by him and just stayed at my pace and just running off field. Like, I was, only time I looked at my watch is when it would hit for the mile marker. So I was just running off field, passing people, feeling good. And I was telling my girl to text me, like, you know how the racer tell you your projected finish at each 5K mm-hmm. split? So I was telling her to text me them, because I had my phone on me during the race, and I thought I would see it on my watch. Afterwards, I remembered that if I had my earpiece in, it'll read me the text message. So she was texting me, and I wasn't for sure, you know, what the projected finish time was. But afterwards, when I looked at it, it had me started out at like 248, then it was like 246, a high 246, then it was a low 246, then it was like 245. Fine. Anyway, when I got, they was all over the course. So when I got close to the middle of the race, that's when I knew I was seeing people that I know. It was a lot more people, a lot more energy. And I think I got a little bit carried away. I let the your emotions kind of get you, because I think I ran like a 5:45 that mile. And I was like, shit, I may have been going a little too fast. So, but I still was feeling good. I started the race off knowing I was going to probably have some cramp issues because I was a little dehydrated. Because when I went to the bathroom before the race, your urine ain't clear. You probably a little dehydrated, and it was a little darker. So I'm like, shit. So I just made sure I tried to get something at every water stop, but not drink too much. But around mile, I say probably like 15, that's when I knew. I was like, I'm starting to really kind of feel the cramping maybe coming on. So I was like, I'm going to take a couple miles off. I'm like, I got plenty of time. Like, I went through the halfway point like a minute faster than I wanted to. So I went through it like 1:23, and I was really going for a high 1:24.
Okay.
So 15, I was like, I can take 3 miles off. You know, I can just dial it back, just run off of effort. And, you know, we'll save that for the last 10K or for the last 10 miles. And I thought I was dialing it back, but hell, when I went back and looked at my splits, shit, them splits was faster than the first half of the race. So I'm like, shit. So at that point, I saw a couple of people I knew. I saw the people, the 313 from Detroit out on the court. I saw Tommy runs around 17 or whatever. And I'm still feeling good, you know. And then about right around the 30K, that's when I really started to feel the cramping. And that part, that's when I really dialed it back. So that part, when I went back and looked at my splits, I really dialed it back about, I don't know, 15 seconds or so. But actually, when I dialed it back, that was the pace that I really wanted to run for most of the race. So I still was doing, you know, I knew I would go under 250. But when I hit the 35K to the 40K was the toughest part of the race for me, because that's when I knew if I stepped wrong, if I you know, look wrong. I was gonna cramp. And I was like, I was coming with all kind of little mind games, like just try to relax, just kind of picture yourself relaxing. And that worked for a while, but it still, man, it hit me right it before like, the 40K.
Remember who you are.
Yeah.
I'm Black Jesus. And it's like, back in the game.
And I thought about that too, man. I thought about Marcus going to have another story. But I got right before the 40K, man. Like, 40K was in sight, and I had to stop and walk. And I started walking, and I was like trying. You know how you don't want to completely stop so it'll lock up, but yeah, you're trying to keep your leg, your toes up, and your leg straight so it don't just, because it was in my hamstring. I could feel it in my calves a little bit, but it was mostly going to be the hamstring. So I'm walking peg leg for a while, and so then I just started counting. I counted to like 40, 45, and then I was like, I'm going to try to get back going if it don't get worse. So I got to like 40, 45, and it didn't lock all the way up. So I was like, all right, I'm going to see if I could just store it back up again. And I got started back up, and I just progressively moved it a little faster, a little faster. Then I remember I had some beet juice in my back short pocket. So the thing with the beet juice, man, I don't do it every race, but if I can find it, I take some, like, I take a bottle the day before the race, and then I take some maybe like 2 hours before the race. And they say it helped the blood, it helped with your blood flow or whatever. So I had one bottle at the start that I took, but when I was doing my check bag, I saw that I had put another one in there. So I grabbed that one out instead of leaving it in my check bag, and I just put it in the zip thing on my shorts just in case. And when I thought about that, I rushed back there, I grabbed it, opened it, I drank a little bit. At that point, though, I couldn't drink much because they were going to make me sick or whatever. So I drank just enough. They let the cramps go for like, I don't know, a couple, like, maybe like a 1K, but then it came right back. So at that point, it was just, man, get to the finish line without cramping up again. And then I saw my girl in like right at mile 26, and she hollering my name, she videoing it. And I'm looking at her, shaking my head, like, I can't even really look over there, because if I do anything right now, I'm going to be walking. So I put my hand up like this to let her know that I saw her, and just me putting my hand up like that, I almost cramped again. And then, you know, you make that left turn up the little hill, make that right to the finish line. I'm talking, as soon as I crossed the finish line, my hamstring locked up on the left side. And they came and they grabbed me. I'm with the lady walking with me for a while. It took a minute, but, you know, I told her, I said, all right, bro, I appreciate you. You can go back and help somebody else now. I'm good. So I got a little bit more. I didn't get to empty the tank like I wanted to, but it was a good day. It did let me know that, you know, summertime, you know, if you ain't hitting them paces, you know, if you're putting out the effort, I think that worked big, you know, effort. Because I ran the whole race off effort. I wasn't ever trying to lock in at a certain pace and go with it. I just wanted to run off effort, feel good. And I think, you know, at this point now, I think I'm going to master how I need to run the marathon for me. So come New York, I'm going to try to go a little bit faster, because I was 255 at Tokyo, 251 in Boston, 248 here. So even though New York a harder course, I'm going to see if I can lower it down a little bit. I should be able to, as long as I don't get lazy. I'll put a time on it. It's too early right now, man.
Oh, my.
Oh, no.
let us down. Come on now.
It's going to be under, but I just said I'm going to try to go under 248. So, I mean, 248, 245, probably in that range. If it's a very good day, which I don't know with New York, man. Them climbs in New York is rough. They rough, man. So I'm just going to stick right there. I ain't going to bite off too much. But 248, 245, somewhere in that happy median right there is where, you know, I'm looking to put it.
Somewhere in there. I love that description, but like one thing I want to go back to real quick before I go to CJ is you talked about getting your partner to text you the splits like during the race. Like why, like talk about the background to that and like why that's important to you.
Well, cause like, you know, like you know how when you do the world majors, it'll show you predicted time. And it'd be a lot of times after the race, like I have friends to be like, yeah, you was on pace to do this, this, and this. Or it predicted you this, this, and this. So, you know, sometimes your watch, especially in Chicago, your watch can be off. Mm. Like the last time I did Chicago, I think I had like 27 miles or something. This time it was like a normal marathon race for my distance. But so I was just thinking, you know, if I could hear that in my head, like if she texted, and then I thought when I train, I always have an earbud in. So whenever somebody texts me, I hear the text message. So in my head, I'm thinking if she texts me while I'm running, I'm going to hear the time and I know whether I need to pick it up a little bit or bag off a little bit. So it was just to see what the official race time was saying my finish time was going to be.
Okay, that makes sense. So I think that's pretty cool, though, because like some people can let it sort of get in their head, especially like knowing that predicted time. So for you, obviously, it's a motivator. And I think that's the cool thing about having these discussions. You sort of see like how different people do different things and still get like similar results.
Yeah, so it was just, man, I do it different. Like, I'm going to run off effort. I mean, I'm going to try to lock in. And once I lock in, I try to, like, tunnel vision it, man. And I can try to block out everything else. So if I want to finish, if my goal is to finish, I'm going to finish. And ain't nothing going to stop me from finishing.
PK, what watch you use? You use Garmin or Coros?
Garmin.
You know, Garmin got, like, a course estimated finish time, like, feature you can use. So depending on what pace you're on for the race, it'll tell you what's your estimated finish time throughout the entire race.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, but I don't play around with that stuff. But I did know they had like a is it the pace setter that you can put in on Garmin for the.
They got two different ones. So they have the race, the pro pacing. It's to give you each mile, but I don't like that because it might not be lined up with the GPS. So I don't use that one. But if you know estimated how, you know, the course won't be 26.2. So Chicago is like literally 26.6 for most people watches. So you can put that in as the distance and they'll give you an estimated finish time throughout the race based on what pace you've been running for the race.
Okay. So you put in like the 26.6 or 26.5, I tried that in a race, man. I think I did something like that in I know what I did. I ran Tokyo like that as a workout or something. I have put it in for Tokyo because my girl was wanting to track me in Tokyo, and she was like, if you turn on the live feature on your watch, I can track you better. And I put it in as a workout or something, man. And I think it had me, what it was giving me my average pace for the whole race and not by mile or at that moment. And I didn't like it. So I was just like, I'm just going to go with it.
The average pace will definitely throw you off. There's one that you can use that'll show, it'll show the average pace, but it also shows the pace that you're on and the total time. So I like to use it when it shows the total time. And then it like flashes like, what's the estimated finish time? But it's a little tricky. One of the day I can show you how to do it.
Yeah, I might have to do that on a training run a couple of times. Then I do it in a race. But Chicago was nice though. I was actually feel like I did like with my half marathons now. Like I can really like run it the way I want to run it, and pretty much get the results I want to get, unless you know cramping or something like that. But it was a good race, man. It was a good day. A lot of people crushed it that day.
Yeah, I mean, we're going to talk about the world records for Chicago and obviously Berlin. But before we get to that, I mean, we need to talk about obviously the Jordan selection that you brought for Chicago. You brought the Chicago colorway. I mean, you came in strong with four pairs. So what are you going to do for New York? You mentioned about running that as well.
Yeah, I'm going to New York and I'm going to have to come up with a colorway. I think I'm going to have four pair. I actually got to Chicago. I'm like, man, I could have brought my patent leather, black and red patent leather. I'm like, how did I forget them? So I might have to throw the patent leathers in there just because I forgot them for Chicago. But I probably go with some, you know, I'm having a pair of 12. And I'm probably going to go with like some black and white. I got the Royal. They're not taxis, but they the Royals. I think I might take them. I got a pair of fives I probably take. if I have a 12, if I, you know, I'm going to have some one. We'll see. We're going to have to put it together. I'm going to have to look at their colorway, they colors for the worries. I know it's like blue, black. We'll find some stuff, though.
Sounds good, man. Looking forward to seeing that. I know, CJ, you were also out in Chicago as well. Can you talk a little bit about your time out there as well?
Yeah, it was cool spectating for the race, you know.
Hold on, man. Get it right. Elite spectating.
Elite spectating. You know, elite spectating out there. Nah, it was cool, man. Perfect day, as you said, PK. Like, it literally was perfect weather. Slight overcast, very thin clouds, but it felt nice. I was like, oh, it's going to be a good day. I really felt that Kipton was going to set the record. I was like, if he is not hurt, he's going to get it. Because it was just too smooth out there. I ended up being at the 5K mark around mile 12, mile 13. And then I hopped on the red line to get to Chinatown because I was tracking my girl for each point in the race. So I got to like four different stops throughout the course. But, you know, that energy was just there, man. Even though I wasn't running it, but the energy of the crowd, being a part of the crowd, I had a little megaphone. I seen some folks on the course, and yeah, it was a great time to be out there. I lost my voice, came back, I'm sick. So, you know, that's how you know it was a proper time out there.
Man, mile 12 was like where I kind of lost it a little bit, man. I'm serious. Like mile 12, I don't know what it was about that area. I don't know if it's because it had people on both sides of the streets and in the middle or what, but mile 12 was hype. Like, I was looking for you out there, man, but I figured I probably wasn't going to catch you.
You was already passed by most of everybody that was running around, you know, 3:30 or faster. Unfortunately, I probably missed because I was coming in later to the areas. So I pretty much missed everybody running, you know, BQ times and faster. So I was like, dang. But, you know.
Yeah. Hey, how did she do, man?
Did excellent. You know, did excellent. Okay. Stuck to the game plan, hit the A goal, sub four, what, an 80, I think 83-minute PR from Marathon One. So, you know.
Good day.
Good training work. You just got to trust the process.
Coach CJ, that boy legit. Coach CJ.
That's kind of wild, though, when, like, seeing, like, the marathon from the other side when you're just there to support. I kind of feel like when you're in that position, you're that sort of person that can really enjoy the weekend where everyone else is, like, stressed. Like the day before, afterwards, no one can really enjoy it.
It's true. It's true. I had zero. I only had a little stress of making it to a certain area, but like I didn't have that race day stress. Like, oh, I got to go actually run this race. I actually ended up doing my first marathon pace workout that Friday before everything's kicked off for the weekend. So I had that to worry about. But once I finished that, I was just like, yeah, I'm good for the weekend. Let's just go have some fun. I'm just finna go check out, you know, encourage everybody and enjoy the race.
Yeah, that makes sense. So, obviously, I know we've got Phil's obviously got New York next. Rob's got Indy. I'm out injured for a while. What's next for you? Because I know you're training something.
Yeah, so I'm in the middle of training for Honolulu. A third of the way through pretty much now, a month into it. It's going good. Like, I haven't, you know, really touched marathon-type work since Boston. So the first couple of weeks were humbling. You know, you think you somewhere, you think you're at a certain fitness level, and then you go do the workouts and fitness level is like, nah, you're not here right now. But that's just, you know, that's part of it. And it's all about effort. And as long as you give good effort, as PK say, like, as long as you're giving good effort, your body will start to adjust and adapt and start to pick up the fitness gains. So if I wasn't sick this past week, I felt like I was getting my legs back up under me to really start nailing these workouts. But once I start feeling better, I am really into a nice groove of doing all my workouts, doing the strength work, and, you know, sticking to the plan. So I'm excited to see how the rest of the training block will grow once, you know, we really start kicking into these peak weeks that'll be coming up.
Yeah, that sounds good, man. So looking forward to seeing how you get on. And we've got to talk about the world records in both the races. Both were wearing their version of the super shoes. We've got Adidas with the Evo Pro and obviously the new Alphas, which aren't out yet. I'd like to get your thoughts on that, really. So I'll start with you, Rob. What's your kind of thoughts kicking that off? And the whole world record sort of thing. I mean, like seeing, you know, 2:11 for the women in Berlin and the shoe and kissing the shoe. I thought that was a little bit much, but, you know, I'll take it for a moment.
So it's crazy about that. Adidas hit a home run on that whole thing. That, you know, as a shoe company, you got marketing budgets and things like that nature and advertising. But that was just free advertising right there, marketing by her winning and setting the world record. Because it was crazy. Right before that, right when that shoe released, you had the marathon. But I remember hearing people talk about it, like leading up to the race, like, oh, I want to see how this shoe does. $500 for a shoe is crazy. This and that. And then she wins. And then I literally go to Adidas.com the next day. That shoe is sold out. That shoe was sold out right after that race.
They only made a certain number of pairs of those shoes, though, right?
Yeah, yeah. But still, I checked it when it first released. It wasn't like crazy. And then it sold out immediately after that race. I would be interested to see it up close and personal and hold it. I mean, 4.8 or 9 ounces is crazy. But it's a one-use shoe. So, I mean, I would never spend my money on it. I don't care how fast it makes me, unless I'm sponsored by Adidas or somebody going to gift me the shoe. I'll wear it for sure. But those Nikes, I'm interested in those. I see a lot of people rocking them. There's a guy around here who runs his long runs at the same place I run mine at in Indy. And he has a pair of them because he had one of the top 20 marathon times last year. So he's been wearing them and he'll probably end up wearing them. I'm guessing he's going to wear them at the marathon next week. He's a 2:14 guy. So I'm going to have to talk to him and see if I can hold him and check him out. But the sneakerhead in me, I definitely want to take a look at him.
Yeah.
Have Nike said the weight on their new Alphafly?
No, I've been trying to look for it. I'm going to have to dig some more to see the weight, but it's supposed to come out in 2024, January 2024 at that. So more information should be around the corner.
Yeah, because the Alphafly 2s, they just was a miss for me. I've ran in them twice. Well, I take that back. I ran Tokyo in a pair, and I didn't too much care for them. I mean, it's an all right shoe, but it ain't had the same kick. I didn't feel the same response as I did in the ones. So I've been running. Like, I went back to the ones for Boston and Chicago.
I'm not a big Alphafly guy. I just think they're too bulky, boxy for me. I'll rock with the Vaporfly 3. I like a lot more than the 2. So I'm going to wear that one in my next race. I ran a PR in that shoe in the half marathon, and then I've done a 25 miler in it. So I'm going to switch from the Asics to this on this race. So I'm interested to see how it goes.
So you gonna wear the Vapor 3s for Indy?
Yeah, I'm a little nervous because I wore the MetaSP Sky Plus for four consecutive marathons.
Yeah,
I don't know why you gonna mess with that, man.
I mean,
I don't know if I would mess with that unless you've been doing like all your long runs in the Vaporfly 3s. I don't know if I would mess with that.
In the Vaporfly 3s, I ran a 25 miler. Before Berlin, I ran a half marathon, and then I paced a half marathon in them. So, I mean, they got some juice in them.
So, you got a good feel for them?
Yeah, I got a good feel for them.
But man, why are you switching, though? Because you were saying you were hyping it before, though, in the last episode.
Yeah, he was real hype about them Asics. Oh, yeah.
What's happened?
Them Asics are it.
What's the problem there? What's the problem?
Now that I'm talking about it, I'm nervous to do it. I really am scared about doing this. I've been on the line because I just wore those MetaSP Sky Pluses in this 20 miler that I had this weekend. And my pace was supposed to be 6:20 for majority of it. And I was hitting like 5:40s, 5:50s. And I was like, oh, man, this feels good. And then my coach was like, you sure you're not going to wear those in the race? I was like, oh, damn. So I don't know. To be determined.
I'm going to tell you a shoe that really don't get love that I actually thought about taking to Chicago. It's just I didn't have a fresh pair.
The Jordan 2.
Yeah. I would like to Jordan 2. Hey, while you talking, them black Jordan 2s, I'm thinking if they still got a couple pair hanging around in a couple months, yeah. I'm going to have to grab a pair of. But nah, seriously, the Endorphin Pro 3s, man, that Endorphin Pro 3, I like it better than the Vaporfly. I will put it ahead of my Vaporfly, but not ahead of the Alpha. It's just the geometry of the shoe. It's just, for me, it just get my feet up quick. Like, if I'm doing heel sprints or something, that's the shoe I want to be in because I know I better get my foot up quicker. I get better knee lift and knee dry. I actually thought about marathoning in that shoe. But the pair I got a lot of miles on, and I was like, I may not need to try that for 26. But if I get a fresh pair, I think I might put them to the test.
I might look into that for Hawaii. I did like the original Endorphin lineup when they came out with the original Pros, and I've heard nothing but good things for the threes. A lot of people had great success in Chicago in the threes, so I may look into it for the end of the year.
Yeah, the threes are nice, man. They nice. The twos, they garbage. I just gave away a pair of those the other week, but
I know you didn't like the twos. I like them for training. I got like 400 or 500 miles on them, and they still feel good for training runs.
I didn't even give them a chance, man. Like I had one pair that I tried out, and I didn't like them, and I put maybe like 100 miles on them, and then I had got another pair, and I didn't even. I gifted them somebody else. Like I just, they trash. But the threes are number two.
Yeah, that got me scared now. I think I'm gonna wear those Asics now.
Ah, man, this is how I decide which shoe I'm gonna race in. Like if I have a good long workout in a shoe, then I'm gonna be like, okay, this is a shoe that I might run for race day. Then another shoe that, like, if I got an idea of this is the shoe I want to run, I take that one, and then like I just kind of like put them on the day before the race or whatever and see which one feel good. Mm-hmm. And then the one that I got a good feeling about, I might do a shakeout run in that one. And then if it work out in the shakeout run, then I'll run with it. So like for Chicago, I took the Alpha ones, the first colorway, the black ones. When I took the Alpha twos, I don't know if it was the first colorway, the second one, the orange ones that Kipchoge ran in before, I took them. And so I had a good workout in the ones, the black ones. So that's why I took them. And then I thought about running in the twos, but I did my shakeout run in them, and I just didn't, like, I felt some stuff in my Achilles. I don't know. I just didn't feel good about it. So I packed them back in the bag, and I went with the ones, the first ones I got.
Do you know the thing about super shoes is I think, like, I don't know if it's for you guys as well, I do feel like you do get sold like down like a story type thing. And I've got to be real, like obviously my marathon PR still came in the Alphas, but I still feel that the Alphas for me in a marathon aren't the best shoe because I just don't feel like I've got the, when my form sort of gets less efficient as you get into the race, this becomes like wearing like clogs. And when I'm like feeling fresh and I'm clicking through it, they feel great. But once I'm a bit slower, they're not as good. Whereas I find that the Vapors work better for me. But then it's kind of like all the shoes now are so close together. I mean, obviously, we're not going to talk about the Evo in that sort of conversation, that I kind of feel like, when do super shoes become like a bad thing for like, the mass market? Because they're basically tailored for elite runners. And then we're trying to like work the best out of them, which we can't get the best out of them sometimes.
Yeah. I definitely feel like they get overhyped. At the end of the day, man, a shoe is just a shoe, you know? I mean, I, you just pick a shoe that you're comfortable with. Like, when I first started running and was running some pretty decent times and people was asking me what shoes I run in, I was running Asics. And that's before Asics hyped up their lineups. Like, they had the big, heavier shoes out there, the 2000s and the other shoes they had. And they were surprised I ran in them shoes because they were like, they were so heavy. And that's when I really kind of started looking at different shoes because I would look at the weight. And if I could find a lighter shoe, I automatically in my head that would translate to a faster time, and not necessarily true, because, you know, if you're a person that like cushion, then I would say go with a cushion shoe. If you're a person that like something that's flat and firmer, go with a firmer shoe. But just to buy a super shoe because they say it make you this much faster. Nah, the training mile is going to make you faster. The shoe is just to get you to the start line injury-free, or to get you to a certain point in the race comfortable. But
yeah,
that's my take on it.
And then now we've got like a 400-pound shoe, which you use once. I mean, it's so out of range for like the majority of people.
Yeah.
It seems like to make more running more inaccessible than it was before.
Yeah.
I don't know how it's a selling point. They can make it more durable. I'm sure they could.
They claim they shedded all their weight by making it less durable. That's why they only recommend one usage in it or whatever, because it's less durable. Because it probably, if you try to get two races out of it, now that'll be crazy. Somebody buy a pair, run a race, PR, then they like, oh, I'm going to try to get one more race out of them. You out there and the shoe fall apart on you. Shoe fall apart on you, mile 16.
Oh, mate. If I had them, I wouldn't know what to do with them, to be honest. I'd have to, I mean, like, you'd have to save them. I mean, like, what do you do with them? I mean, do you train them with them first, and then you save the race, or do you just go into it? I mean, I don't know if they're close to the Pro 3s. I don't know.
Yeah, I couldn't do it.
I have to do some treadmill miles a little bit. I would rock them on the tread and then just go if I was going to use that shoe, but I don't really mess with Adidas like that, so I have no interest.
Yeah, I probably would have to do the track or something, a couple, maybe like 400 meters. I just do enough mileage to feel how the shoe kind of like the strike or whatever, and then after that, I turn them off.
Yeah. Yeah, that's fair. I know we've spoken a little bit about the shoes, but obviously the world records, you know, you've got Kevin in Chicago as well. So that was just insane to look at, to be honest, even watching back on this, you know, the live feeds. I don't want to say comfortable because that's just disrespectful, but I mean, he just looked like pretty serene all the way throughout.
I mean, did you see the breakdown of his second half splits? Like, he ran like the fastest mile in a marathon ever at like mile 22. He dropped like a 4:18 mile at mile 22 of the race.
His closing 5K was what, 14:01?
Something like that.
He's wild for that.
He a beast, man. He a beast.
What was crazy was I was asking my guy, we were talking about it before. I was like, you think the record's gonna fall today? And he was like, no. He already admitted that he started training late just due to injury or whatever. I was like, I don't know, man. I feel like he might get it. It's a perfect weather day, this and that. He said, yeah, it'll be close, but I don't think he's gonna do it today. But he'll definitely get it.
And he was sandbagging.
As soon as he got it, I texted him. He's like, man.
He was sandbagging, man. He was sandbagging.
Yeah, he was telling everybody, I'm going for a course record. BSing.
He was sandbagging. The dude asking, I think a reporter ended up getting it out of him, though, because the reporter was like, he said he was just going to go for the course record. So the reporter was like, oh, okay, so you're not in as good as shape as you was for London. Because London, he was only, what, like 20-something seconds off? So, of course, dude was like, no, I'm in better shape for London. I'm in better shape than what I was for London. So, at that point, I think he said, yeah, we'll see. If it comes, you know, it's that type of day, then I'll go for it.
To me, though. You sandbagged us for Chicago.
I didn't sandbag, man. My training was pretty much, you could look at it, man, 200 miles. No, and it wasn't none of them, like, just no blazing fast times, man. Like the speed work wasn't blazing fast. The long runs was just getting it done. So I don't think I was sandbagging, man. The heat was sandbagging, not me.
Well, I'm downplaying. I'm next race I'm doing, I'm just downplaying it. I'm just gonna be like, I don't know. See how it goes.
That's how you gotta do it, man. Like I said, you gotta bring yourself down, mellow out. Just chill it, and then just go out there and do what you do. Because you put all these expectations on yourself, and a lot of time that'd be too much. You know, that's just another element of stress.
True.
I mean, you got stress enzymes going up, and it just it's counterproductive because at the end of the day, you can't even control everything because you can't control the weather. So, you know, 26 miles is a long time to be out there on the body. So you just go out there. And I think my goal, like I said at my last post, I think I was just like, I want to finish and I want to empty the tank. That's two things I can control right there. Finish it and then just try to get as much out of myself as I can. And whatever the time be it, I'm going to have to live with it.
Yeah, man, that's wise advice because I think, like, especially in the social media sort of thing, environment that we're all in, like, you do see, like, it's almost like the narration of, like, okay, I'm going for this race, I've got to go for this time. And like you're saying, like, you can't always control the time, but you can control your effort. And I do feel like there's a pressure, not a pressure, that sounds worse than it actually is, but just an expectation of a lot of people now oversharing and putting their goals out there. And it can backfire sometimes.
Yeah. Yeah, it can, but it's all for fun, man. Like, none of us getting paid for this.
Yeah.
Not yet. I'm getting the bag here soon.
Hey, Rob, say he trying to get this paper while we play.
Hey, just wait on it. We bag chasing.
Hey,
put the signs up for nothing.
Oh, my word.
Let me know how it work out, man.
I got you. Man. I got the shipment.
Let me know how that work
house.
Out. Yeah, just send me a couple of shoes, man, and then get me in the grandstand.
I got you.
But yeah, man, the records, though, I remember, I don't know if I told y'all on the show or not, but I know I was telling people that both the records was in jeopardy of falling in Chicago, like the women's and the men's. And then I changed that up, though. When I seen her drop that 2:11, I knew that was going to be a little bit out of reach for Cephon for Chicago. I knew that was kind of a little bit too quick. Like, she dropped the real record in Berlin, like, way too far. She put it out of reach for a while.
I'm really trying to see the head-to-head matchup in the men's side. We got it. We need it. The world needs it. We have to see it.
I think they did it right, though. I wouldn't want to see it happen in Berlin or, like, Chicago when the Olympics is literally next year. I would rather it be done in the Olympics than just a world major race.
I would have wanted to see it in Berlin or Chicago. Because you got to look at it. The Olympics going to be in the summer, man. And it's going to be in Paris. And it's not going to be... It's not going to be...
It's going to equalize the playing field, man.
Nah.
I don't think we're going to see it at the Olympics, so I just don't...
You don't think he's trying to go for gold?
I'll say this. We'll see the matchup in the Olympics. I don't think we'll see a new world record in the Olympics. Does that make sense?
No record at the Olympics. It's too hot. It's going to be too hot.
Yeah. Well, we'll see it. We'll definitely see a nice face-off and probably an Olympic record, but no world record.
I think we've seen the best of Eliud Kipchoge could put out. And what y'all saw in Chicago is just the future of the sport now. That's no disrespect to it.
He runs 180 miles a week.
Yeah, I mean, he may not even surpass Kipchoge for his career-wise, but, like, right now, he cannot run with that guy, man. Dude is just way too strong, way too young. He just...
Them young legs, man.
The results he's had, though, in his early races, I mean, it's been outrageous.
He's not even figuring it out yet. He's still trying to figure it out. He could turn it on a lot sooner if he wanted to.
Yeah. Do you think we're going to see either of them two running before Paris, potentially?
No.
Tokyo or something.
If I were their agents, only world major I would consider, and maybe go to Kevin, he probably would do it, but be Tokyo. Because you would have the ideal, like, race temp. And then it's far enough away from the Olympics to recover and go back into a training session. But
when's Tokyo?
That's the end of February, first weekend in March. Yeah, it's first weekend in March. Yeah.
That would be, you're right. That'd be the ideal one for him for sure. But I don't see them racing like a marathon before then.
Well, the last Olympics, Kipchoge did a marathon. They did one like in the one.
Did they do that at like an airport?
Yeah, they did it at an airport. I think that was in like February, March. I think it was in February. of that year. And so that'll let him get in two races a year. So I think, I mean, because they doing it for money now. They doing it to stack paper. And so I could definitely see Kevin going over there and doing Tokyo. It's not a technical course. It's not hilly, so it ain't going to be extra taxing. Now, what I would be surprised if they both showed up in London, and I know they're not going to Boston. Like, Boston.
I can't see that. Yeah.
Boston's for the dogs.
I feel like London, Boston. Yeah, London, Boston, Chicago, Berlin. I think they're just too close either side and before the Olympics, to be honest.
So the only one would be Tokyo.
Yeah. Yeah.
So it'd be nice to see that.
But then do you think that leaves it open to other athletes, you know, those that aren't going to Olympics, to win a major?
Most definitely. Most definitely.
Because I'm not saying it's not going to be competitive, but, like, it still will be competitive. I mean, you're not just going to get some guy rocking up who just went to Starbucks and just, like, stopped working. Do you know what I mean?
I saw this reel a couple months ago, and somebody sent it to me since Kevin broke the record. But it was a interview, and I don't remember the runner's name, but it was a young runner in Kenya, and they was asking him about, you know, somebody from Kenya, you know, breaking Kipchoge's record or whatever. And dude was like, yeah, he like, it's plenty of runners here in Kenya that's faster than Kipchoge. He was like, they just don't get the opportunity. He was like, it's a lot of guys out here that just as fast or faster than Kipchoge, to where if they was in his situation, they would be faster than him. He was like, yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember them saying about Kevin, you know, he young, and most of these guys, they start off on the track. But he said, you know, he didn't ever get to go to the track because his family couldn't afford to send him up to the track to train and do the racing and stuff. So that's why he went straight to the road. So there is other people out there to where if these guys don't show up, you know, and somebody get a shot at the start line, yeah, that's an opportunity for some of these other guys to get out here and put down their time.
This our chance right here. It's our chance.
Yeah. Rob might be able to go over there to Rob might get over there and win Boston this year or something, man. I don't know.
Hey, I don't know about that. But, hey, by the end of 2024, I got a time I need to be at to put me in, like, range of where I want to be. So as long as I get to that time goal by the end of 2024, I'll be straight.
Yeah, that's fair. I think it's going to be interesting seeing how next year plays out for sure. I know we've spoken a little bit about, obviously, Kipchoge, Kiptum, you know, the other sort of stuff. But one thing I'm quite interested in to sort of go into before we wrap this up is just what you do post-race. Like, so for me, like, I talked about the injury, but also, like, on the, I guess, in the mindset-wise, like, I'm not really feeling going back into training. So, like, but I've done similar things to you guys where you do a marathon, you won quite soon afterwards. So can you, I guess you, Rob, and you, Phil, sort of talk a little bit about that, about just getting back into a marathon block straight away?
With me, since I did it last year, right before Chicago, I had one in Michigan. And with me making the race after the A race both times, I think it's helpful in a way. I mean, you're also doing a marathon, and you're still trying to do good before your A race. So that could be detrimental to your actual A race. But with me, both times, ended both those races healthy before my A race. It allowed me to still stay focused because it was my A race. So I didn't let up off the gas. So after Berlin, I mean, like I said, I ran every day that week. I even had a little bit of speed in some of those workouts and some of those runs. And then after that, had another moderate week, and then this week was high quality. It's really more so about staying locked in. I mean, as long as I can focus on my A race, which I'm staying focused, I mean, I'm pretty good. So I think it's positive to put the A race second if you're going to do back-to-back marathons.
No, I was just going to say the same thing. Like, it's kind of like a build-up. Like, you know you got a race, but then you know you need to – if you set the races up, you needed enough time to recover and then, you know, get back into it, shave off some cobwebs, get a few little faster workouts in there, and get the body back going. And the thing I like about the marathon, it ain't nothing crazy. So, like, the pace should be slow enough to where, you know, you can hit that pace. Like, it ain't like 5K race where you're going to be wide open. It's just with the marathon, it's more about the conditioning and the fitness level. And then, of course, if you're trying to PR, then, yeah, you're going to need to throw a lot of speed in there. But sometimes, you know, you can PR without adding a lot of speed. You can just get more efficient at different things. So with stacking those races, just make sure you recover enough and set your expectations to where, you know, that match kind of what you're doing. So for me, for, like, New York, I took off this whole week. So I didn't run at all this whole week. I'm going to run later today. And then all I'm going to do is try to get to 200 miles for this month. And then I'm going to taper and go to New York and see what happens.
I think that when you're in it, like you stack them together, I think there's a mindset that you can just sort of go back into it. So like when I did like this year, like Boston to London, like I'll be honest, like physically and like mentally, I was just tired. But then once you're in, like, I think you recover physically quite well, but I think it's the mental side as well. But I think once I was in the race, actually, I was locked back in again on Sunday, but obviously then the physical side of catches up. So like, I think once if you've got it set up, you can find a way to lock in. But like now that I'm stepped away from actually having a marathon, I'm just like, do you know what? I'm actually enjoying not running. Not because I don't enjoy it, but
wait. Can't wait until October 28th is over.
I think I've just got to reword that. I do enjoy running, but I think it's just like, as you guys will know, it's just like the focus and what it takes to do what you need to do to run what you want to run or try to run. It comes at a cost, and I think like you have to respect that process and knowing when to like let it refill so you can come back to it, you know.
So how much mileage do you drop, like for you right now, Marcus? Like you're saying, you're not going back into another cycle for a while, and you got all this time. How many miles do you put in a week at this point?
At the minute, because I'm injured, I've not run since Berlin. So, but usually, what I would technically do is I'd probably have like a minimum of 2 weeks off, and then the third week I just start running easy, like 30, 40 minutes. And sort of build up from there, and then kind of like gradually start building up. But it really depends on what you're training for, really. Yeah. But I mean, I try to keep like the mileage fairly consistent throughout the year, so it's not like a big drop off. But I still think it's quite important post like marathon just to have like a couple of weeks off.
Cool. Personally, I like to keep my outside of racing, like maintenance. Maintenance miles, I like to be around 70 to 80.
Maintenance miles.
At the very low.
Bro, you're on another level. That's it. I love it.
Yeah, man.
So here's two questions for y'all. So, like, projection-wise, where do you see your year-to-date mileage at the end of
2023?
So I should hit a little over 2,000, maybe 2,100.
Yeah.
2,100?
Yeah.
Mine'll be between 24 and 25 because I'm running 200 miles a month. I'm just going to stick to that.
What about you, Marcus?
I'm on 2,253 miles right now. So I don't know when I get back in. So it should be over 3.
Y'all some heavy hitters, man. Y'all some heavy hitters.
But obviously, I've got a month off, so it depends. But it would have been over, well over 3.
There we go. I was just curious. And then my next question would be, have you guys started planning for your 2024 schedule? Because I know me personally, like, I've had a nice groove the last 2 years. Mm-hmm. I like the 3 marathons set up. So I'm at least, I know my marathons. At the moment, there might be more marathons, but I know at least 3 marathons for next year. Do you guys have anything on your radar for sure that you guys are going to do next year?
We're catching up in Boston, so that's
Tokyo.
Yes, Tokyo.
Man, CJ,
Chill out, man.
What?
Nah, I want to run. Well, my deal is I want to get my second six star. I don't know why, but
is that a
I don't
thing?
Think I'm. Yeah.
What? Yeah.
It's a thing.
Yeah, yeah, man.
It's people that got 2, 3, 6 star, man. Yeah, I don't know. Like, I think because the pandemic kind of like interrupted it to where it just after I got mine, it really wasn't no big deal. So now I want to kind of go do it all over again. And after running Chicago and after I do New York, I need Tokyo and Berlin. And I'm pretty much in Berlin. I just got to get them to approve my application. But I got to try to figure out how to get into Tokyo at this point. So, and if I don't do it this year, I'll do it. Definitely do it next year. But I know they do the little drawing, like the little lottery drawing, where if you got so many stars, you can enter the lottery, and you can enter like a random drawing for a certain amount of spots. So I'm definitely going to do that for Tokyo. But if I don't get in Tokyo, I'm still going to probably race a marathon in March because I don't think I'm going to race Boston. I'm just going to go and run it on field.
Oh, he says that now.
For real, man. Like,
I don't know. I don't believe anything you say until I see the race results.
He's the biggest sandbagger on the podcast, man.
Hey, man, I'm just telling you how it is, man. Like, I've ran Boston enough times to where that course, man, I don't want to. You're not going to run your fast. Yeah, that course is challenging. So I like the challenge, but to say I'm going to go racing and run this time. When I know I can run another race.
No, I'm a PR. I'm a PR there next year. What?
I'm not saying I can't go to Boston next year in PR. I'm saying I don't want to do that. Like, I don't want to put myself through. I don't want to put myself through that, man.
I don't want to do that.
No, I don't. Like, because you got to pay for that. It's a price. You know that. It's a price you're going to pay to go to Boston in PR. Not saying you can't go to Boston in PR because you can do it. People do it. But you got to pay a price to do it. I ain't paying it.
You know, we're going to be having this conversation with Phil next year. He's going to be giving us that Black Jesus-like description of how he at Boston. Like, you know you're going to do something there. I know you're going
to
do something there.
He sounds like me. He sounds like me to my teammates. So, like, at practice on Tuesdays, I'll ask Coach what paces he's looking for. And then I'll ask them what they're thinking. I'm like, man, y'all going too fast. And they just, Hannah definitely should roll her eyes at me like, okay, Rob, like, you know, you're not going to follow the pace plan and just go 20 seconds faster than what he says. So that, yeah, that's what Phil is to us, bro.
Nah, yeah, man. What did y'all think about all the fuss about the Boston qualifying stuff?
Oh, I told
you I was going to be, it was that cutoff time. You're like, no, they're going to be that cutoff.
I was wrong, man.
CJ and I said there was going to be a big cutoff.
Yeah, I didn't think it would be that big, but I was shocked at all the blowback. Like, everybody know how Boston works. So if the cutoff time is 7 minutes, then it's 7 minutes. If it's 5 minutes, it's 5 minutes. If it's no cutoff, it's no cutoff. So I didn't get all the blowback.
It's just been a couple of years of us being spoiled that there was no cutoff time. So since now the cutoff team came back at the highest cutoff time, you know, with a full field, it's just like, you know, so many people, over 11,000 people didn't get in. So, and that's tough.
I will say, I definitely feel for the people that didn't make it for the cutoff reason. But in general, I mean, that's why you like the race in a way. It's like a double-edged sword. Like, you like that cutoff, like the, how exclusive it is. If it wasn't that exclusive, you wouldn't want to run Boston. You can't sit here and tell me that you'd want to run Boston if it wasn't so exclusive. So if you're saying that, you're lying. But it's still, I mean, it still stings, though, for people. I definitely understand where they're coming from, for people that were so close and thought they had a big enough buffer. Because I remember my first year when I got in, I had 2:58 and I was so worried. And then they didn't have a cutoff. I was like, oh, whew. But man, I can only imagine not making the cut. Now that would suck. But again, we like it because it's so exclusive. So it's a double-edged sword. I mean, worst case scenario, I mean, what they could do is they could just make the time faster and then we'd see how people really respond to that. they cut.
Well, people are running faster now. You know, people are running faster. There's all the super shoes. There's the $500 shoe we talked about, and it's, you know, helping people get this advantage. So I think they're going to have to put up the time, maybe 2.5 minutes, 5 minutes. PK, what you think? You think they're going to move that time?
I hope not. I mean, because I'm looking at it from the standpoint where I got, like, my friends, I got friends that's slower. I got some that's right there in the middle that's inspiring to run Boston. And right now the time is, like, it's reachable, but it's going to take 110% effort for them to get there. And if they move the time 5 more minutes, a lot of the people, it might just turn them and be like, I ain't going to be able to do it. So I wish they would just keep it. Because like you say, some years people going to – the last 2 years we didn't have a cutoff. And now we got one that's 5 minutes. So let's leave it there another year or two and see if the trend go back down. Because, I mean, I don't know. I just think it's a fine line. Because if you move it too high, then you turn off a lot of people that's capable of maybe doing it. But just get deterred by the time where if you you're doing the cutoff time anyway, so the fastest applicants are going to go anyway. So I don't see no need to move, but they might move it. I didn't think it would be 5 minutes. And I feel for people that's had a 5-plus minute cushion and still didn't get in. Like, yeah, that'll sting a little bit. But me, I'd be like, okay, let's go back to work.
Can 2021, I just say one thing?
It was 7 minutes in 2020, 2021. Yeah.
They only accepted like 20,000 people to run that race, though. That's why it was so large.
Still, man. Just imagine people that got turned away that year.
Yeah, that was, I think you're right there.
That was the anniversary year, too. Like, yeah. The 125th with the blue and yellow jacket. I'm looking at mine now up in the closet.
I appreciate there's going to be people that got the qualifying time and feel like a certain type of way because they've worked hard to get that and they sort of feel like I should get a space. But they do tell us when we apply that your qualifying time may not be enough to get you into the race. And just to provide some context, like if you look at the London Marathon, even for people that in the UK, so like for example, for the Good for Age, right, that application window was this week. And they actually say on their page, if you've got a Good for Age qualifying time that is less than 10 minutes under the qualifying time for your age group, we recommend that you still enter the ballot. Now, I am like 7 minutes in and I'm like, okay, I might not get it. And I'm like 10 minutes. And, you know, and people are complaining about 5:29. I'm like, bro, do you know how hard it is to get to London for a Good for Age or in a championship time? Then you've got the people that have maybe not got the qualifying time, still like 2:40s, 45s. And then they go into the Good for Age. And it's a very limited spot. So, you know, it's not a lot of space for that one. So, yeah, I think we all kind of know that, like Rob was saying, like that exclusivity is what probably makes people want to do it. But at the same time, I feel like people just need to recognize that, like, they do tell us that we may not get in. And we have to kind of be like, this is life, you know. Sometimes things go for us and some don't. It's just like how you respond back to it. And, you know, and you might not be able to get in for that.
And the first people they want to start beating up on is the charity runners. Well, they shouldn't give out the charity bibs, and that could be an extra. I'm like, man, for real?
It's terrible.
People
have that weird thing of like, people are taking their spaces. Like, I've heard that people say, like, even the international runners are taking the spaces, or the people that are running multiple times are taking someone else's spaces. It's just like, no, that person got the qualifying time. If they want to run it and they can, let them run it.
Yeah, I don't know. This is almost like, I hit the qualifying time, so I'm entitled to be able to go. And that's not, like you say, it's not the case. It's you've hit the time to where you can apply to run it.
Yeah.
And then they'll figure out what time, you know, based off the applicants, who get the spots or not. But I will say, after this year, it'll free up at least one spot because I won't be there 2025. Like, this is it for me, man.
Oh, my word.
We got the same conversation next year.
Hello.
I'm laughing so hard because he knows.
I'm laughing because y'all really clowning me like this, man. I'm not running Boston in 2025. You can write it in stone. I will not be there to run the race.
Okay.
I might be there spectating. I might run the 5K, but I will not run 26.2 in Boston in 2025. Not going to happen.
We're gonna see, but guys, I really love this conversation. And before we wrap this up, I just want to say a quick shout out to Rob's mum. I know she's been ill, and she's a massive supporter of the show and obviously Rob and the work that you do out there. So I hope your mum gets like better, man. So really sorry to hear obviously everything that's going down at the moment.
I appreciate it, man. I know it's been hard to lock in these last couple of weeks for my A race, but this was actually going to be my first marathon that she was going to come to. So I keep putting that in the back of my mind to help me lock in. So whenever I've lost focus as of late, which I don't usually do during a training block, you know, this is like a short window. I've done it several times. I'm like, man, I don't know if I'm going to be able to even finish the race mentally. But I don't know. At last weekend, everything got clear mentally for me. I've been locked in, so I'm ready to turn it on and deliver her a PR and a medal in the hospital. So we'll see how it goes.
Yeah, you got to finish, man. You know that's what she would want you to do, so.
Oh, yeah. I'm a finish. I'm locked and loaded now.
Yeah, you want to holler. Who going to carry the boat?
No, I appreciate that, man. And yeah, no, thank you for sharing that. I think that it's a good point that you touched upon, actually. I just want to go back, and some people may have missed it, but I kind of think it's important to note that life stress does play a big factor into stuff. Like, and it's not like a weakness or anything like that. Just to talk about, like, actually, you know, if you're going through that mentally, it does have an impact on your training. Life stress is life stress, and it does have an impact.
For sure.
But yeah, sending positive vibes your mum's way, man. So yeah.
Appreciate y'all.
Prayers up, man.
Appreciate it, man.
Prayers up for your mom, man.
Until the next episode, guys. We'll catch you then.
It's been real.
Peace.